I hit the button too soon. I clipped pure decking on the song. Oh, I ought to do it again, but I'm not going to. This is Pure Decking show number 33, probably code for something, for August the 2nd, 1953. With me today, I'm Morps. We've got BSV, Heavy, and the Suave. What's up, guys?
Hey, how's it going, hello, man?
Not much.
My God, that's such a fake intro.
Well, hey. I imagine you guys survived the travel of so far. Suave and BSV are out in the midst of the wilderness fighting off zombies and your mutant monkeys. So hopefully they make it to Gen Con.
They're fighting zombies without me? You bastards!
Sorry, my yard is known to produce zombies.
Your yard?
It's true. I had to fight through a whole horde of them to get to the house.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the best security system known to man.
So
I find it funny that I drove for, like, 2 days to get here over at BSV's place, and we're sitting in separate rooms talking to each other on Skype.
Hang on.
Winning.
There we go.
It just doesn't feel right otherwise.
Yeah, right.
I much prefer to think of you as imaginary cartoon characters that are voices in my head as opposed to actual people.
That is going to be freaky when I'm not hearing you guys right directly pumped into my ear. It's going to be kind of weird.
Oh, that's okay. We'll let Suave sit on your shoulders and just, get right into your ears there.
Okay.
So, anyways, as we've been alluding to, we're all meeting up tomorrow at Gen Con.
With some late stragglers coming in, on Thursday?
Are you being all lazy there?
Yeah.
So,
I hear they lost him in Circus, so they had to track him down before they could do anything else.
Really? I haven't talked to any of them since he got over here.
He licked the postage stamp before going.
Oh, no! Whoops!
Yeah, right.
Somebody forgot to tell him about that, didn't they?
Yeah.
Well, the perils of, being in America, where every strip search, they give you the explosives. But due to the traveling and all the craziness with the meetup, the stream is going to be interesting over the next couple of days. We'll probably have some specials on the stream as we all get in one room and set up recording equipment. But at the same time, stuff like Newsreel, we may or may not be able to hit it live. Because I don't know what's going to be going on. So the stream's just going to be a mess. Your best option is to listen to it constantly, get a chip, and plant it into your head and listen to it all the time.
Yeah, they're cheap now. They're $35 a piece, so it's not that bad. Yeah.
And it's down to only 30% insanity causing.
And we'll talk about that in a minute.
Heavy with the foreshadowing there, which I'm not sure why we're foreshadowing in a live show. We don't do commercials, so we don't really need teasers.
We've got a commercial. We are actually going to advertise our buddy Patient Zero, and if you want to go on YouTube, just type in Diggy Diggy Hole. You'll be able to listen to a brand new
music video.
Or check
the Yogscast Facebook, or check, he was giving us the list of everyone who had posted it, which was like, he just put together this little song. It's like, this will be fun. And everyone went insane.
Well, and I mean, that's the whole point. If he's been the patron saint of all of us whenever we've done any kind of show or music and needed music, and he's helped us out, now is our chance to pay back a little bit more.
Well, and of course, we're going to be using it for the break music, but don't you worry. We'll be getting into that. Also, another quick little note. I've been kind of hemming and hawing about it. So I went back to show 30, and starting with show 30, all the links we use in the show are actually going in the posts. I'm not going to do the full show notes because I've got, like, notes for myself and personal insults and lots of swear words in those. So instead, just the links, and those will be in all the WordPress posts, so you can see where I'm getting my news stories from. You can see this is more useful for the stuff we talk about in the Digital Dojo. Mm-hmm. But also that way I've got a quick way to, like, when I need to find a tool that I talked about at work, I can go have a quick place to find it. So that aside, let's see. Let's go ahead and go right into the first one here. This is kind of a biggie. The House has approved a bill basically requiring that internet providers keep logs of their customers' activities for at least a year, just in case the police want to review them. House of Representatives passed that.
Oh. Yeah.
Great.
Lovely.
So how do they plan on stirring this?
Yeah, see, that's the lovely part about it being a lawmaker. They don't actually care. It's basically, they say, not our problem. You deal with it.
All right, we shall store it on papyrus.
There you go. But
mail it to Congress every year.
See, I've got some slug lines out of the article here. To make it politically difficult to oppose, proponents of the data retention requirements dubbed the bill Protecting Children from Internet Pornographers Act of 2011, even though the mandatory logs would be accessible to police investigating any crime and perhaps attorneys litigating civil disputes and divorce, insurance fraud, and other cases as well. So, in other words, they
and
called
how-
it...
Is keeping track of activities protecting anybody?
Well, somebody just please think of the children.
Yeah, that's exactly
Don't
it.
Think it's... of the children that way. Don't think of the children that way.
Yeah, don't think of the children like that. The other slug line I wanted to hit here. At the moment, internet service providers typically discard any log file that's no longer required for business reasons, such as network monitoring, fraud prevention, billing disputes. They do, however... they alter that general rule when contacted by the police performing an investigation. So if the cops call up and say, hey, we think Buddy's doing X, can you keep logs for a while? They'll probably do it. And so it's not that big of a deal. That now they just want to make it mandatory. Be like, oh, yeah, we want to see everything such and such did just in case. Now, the thing is, they don't get real specific in the story. Are they talking about all the data that crosses the wire or just, you know, computer A talked to computer B over port Y? I see a lot of, there's some general problems with this. First and foremost, how the hell do you enforce it? As Swab, you should know with all the traveling you're doing right now, how many open Wi-Fi hotspots are there around or people who don't secure their access?
Seriously, any time I've needed to use the internet and I've been in a city, I could just stop wherever I need to use it. And there's at least one open Wi-Fi access point. Mm-hmm.
Except for apparently my house.
Well,
yeah.
on top of that, what if you use one of the VPN services, like the, what is it, iPred that the Pirate Bay offers or whatever?
Yep.
And then I've also got in here, you know, what about the data storage requirements? Yeah, and anybody who's had to manage logs knows what a pain in the ass it is to do it correctly.
You see, mm-hmm. What they're going to have to do is hollow out an entire mountain and fill it with data storage.
Well, that would be kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, that's going to actually end up being a real cost, and I'm wondering if there's going to all of a sudden be some lobbying from the big internet companies, service providers, saying, hey, we really would rather not spend, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars storing all this data, so we'll give you $20 million to make this law go away.
Well,
that may happen.
That may happen, but, I mean, it's there's the other side of this here of – yeah, well, we just want to log for a year just in case we decide we want to look at somebody's activities. Privacy
Unfortunately,
much?
All the activity we had this year is this one person searched.
Yeah, I mean, okay. But this comes back to a Fourth Amendment thing, don't you think? I mean, don't you have the right to not have your shit searched just because they want to?
Yeah, that doesn't really apply anymore. They've pretty much scrapped that one.
I think they've stopped listening to actually the rights of the people long ago.
There's so many amendments that have been broken lately. In general. It's more of a suggestion or a guideline.
Well, all right. So I guess in this case, it's just more be aware of it. The government's trying to pass it. Maybe you ought to start looking at VPN servers, free shells, ways to bounce your traffic around, just so you don't get, I don't know, log doing something. What happens if I drop malware on somebody's machine and it goes out and starts hitting, I don't know, Pirate Bay? Is this person going to get brought up on charges when they do a casual search for it? I mean, this thing is a fishing expedition's dream. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, oh, their text file, their logs. It's not like anybody's going to bother to print the damn things out to store them. I mean, you don't want to talk about waste. So you'll pull them up. You'll just grip right through them. The piratebay.org. And this person, and this person, and this person, and this person. And it's like, oh, no, I was downloading legitimate torrents from Pirate Bay. And they just laugh at you. I mean.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I run a Creative Commons radio station. I was going on there for content. And they just laugh at you. So.
Yeah, that's going to be an issue for sure. This is really taking me off, at least for the point of view of. When you target a person, an individual, and say, okay, we are paying the fee. We need to track this individual. Then it's targeted. You're getting just enough data that you need to.
Well, you've got to have a reason to want to target that person in the first place.
But now they're going to have so much noise. I mean, you know, when they do go on a fishing expedition, are they really going to have the tools to, you know, search through it?
No, they are. AA is trying.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be too hard to set up an algorithm to find lawbreakers.
No, I think the real problem is going to be actually getting these many people in the courtrooms.
Well, and how much is Google going to charge to search the data for them? I mean, you know, that's the problem, right?
Which company Google is going to care? They'll take that contract, but
yeah.
So, anyways, that one's just, you know, great way to start things off. You know, get all nice and pissy. next one up is a fun one. Apparently, they arrested a topiary from Anonymous and Lulzsec. And the story I went and picked, Topiary Long Sabu, all viewed as a Lulzsec chief, instrumental in orchestrating the group's attacks. His Twitter accounts fell silent about a week ago. Many posts were deleted from it. And, you know, what else did I have in here? Add to the picture, Lulzsec security website has been down on and off for the last few weeks. And essentially the article goes on pointing out all this stuff that Anonymous is claiming they misled the police and they arrested the wrong guy. That they didn't actually get Topiary, they got some other kid. And
which is entirely possible, but it's more likely that they're just kind of rapidly backpedaling, trying to draw the blame away from this guy.
Well, that could be. You know, honestly, what I think it is, if I was, you know, the group trying to run things like Lulzsec, and you were going to have characters showing up like Sabu and Topiary, and I'm probably not saying his name right. Sorry, Topiary. If I'm saying it wrong, or Topiary, I don't know how you just say that.
I think it's Topiary, if I remember sitting on my face, you know, whatever. Which is the Monty Python song. They mentioned that in there, so it's Topiary in that song. Anyways.
Okay, well, anyways, so if I was going to set up this group, you know, I'd have characters, and then you'd have multiple actors play these characters. Because on the internet, that'd be really easy to pull off, right? So maybe they arrested one guy who would occasionally log in as Topiary or might log in as Sabu or might log in as, I don't know, whatever. And then you've got the other guy out there who maybe was playing some of the other characters and they could share passwords. I mean, how hard would that be to pull off?
Yeah, and actually that's quite simple. There's a good book if you want to see how well that's done. Read the first Ender's Game book, and that actually
yes.
Well, example of it.
Okay, but even more importantly, doesn't our law enforcement officials have anything better to do than to chase kids on the internet? I mean, I realize they're targeting them now because they went after government and law enforcement websites, but
yeah, but you got to remember too that, like, what is it? 1 in 4 jobs in the United States is somehow related to law enforcement.
Well, that's true.
It's a massive number. So you guys have the manpower for it.
Well, I know. It's just, it seems like, you know, having solved all of the problems, we're going after script kiddies on the internet.
Yeah, that's the other problem too, isn't it? These guys are really low-hanging fruit when it comes down to it. You know, it's not like they're going after anybody that's running giant botnets and tearing apart banking systems.
You know, not to rag on Anonymous or Lulzsec, but the majority of their crew are script kiddies.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they've got some people in there who actually know what's up, and I'm not going to even play with that. But I'm sure the mass majority of them are script kiddies. They run a script. It happens to work. You know, maybe if Anonymous and Lulzsec can get into your site, you ought to fix your shit. Because what they're going to do is they're going to just start arresting people as opposed to actually fixing the problem.
Mm-hmm. Fixing your internet protection?
I know, madness.
When would you do that?
I mean, absolute madness. Next story in current events. This one's cool. It's a Geek.com story. There is a super cheap PC getting ready to get in the hands. Basically, they've made a $25 PC. It's about as powerful as a cell phone, 700 megahertz ARM 11 processor that is the size of a thumb drive, and it's designed to be plugged into an HDMI port on a TV and give you basically a Linux shell for, you know, $25.
I'm actually holding in my hand a phone that I paid a grand total of $250 for once upon a time, the Palm Pre, 600 megahertz processor, overclockable to 800 megahertz, roughly sitting in the same category of what this thing is. Now you can get it for $25. well worth the price. Play around with it. Put Linux on there. I didn't want to see people use it for an Android device and throw a touchscreen on it, too.
Oh, geez, it's not even that. I mean, these things are being made as an educational tool, but when they hit the market...
The one thing, like, even if it's not the most powerful thing, doesn't have all that many ports or anything like that, just the sheer price of it is going to encourage so many people to pick it up that you're going to see so much development for this device. It's just going to blow your mind, the amount of stuff that's going to come out for within the first year it's out.
Well, think about this. These things are $25 a piece, and you know they're 700 megahertz ARM processor, and ARM processors are really efficient. That's why you can get away with having them a lot less powerful than your desktop PC and still get a lot of shit done on them. So in After Now, one of the things he talked about was crack sticks, which were just stacks of CPUs that were overclocked for cracking encryption. When these things hit the market, you're going to be able to build actual working crack sticks. Supercomputer in a backpack, walk around and just attack encryption.
Oh yeah,
dude.
Then you've got the actual network security world of trying to locate a rogue device on your network that's the size of a thumb drive. Good luck. These things are going to be awesome. I I'm going to have a stack of them when they come out. You know I'm going to have a stack of these things because I'm going to go nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I deal with poor people, and I have a whole big stack of CRT monitors, and it's just going to be, the converter's going to be pricey. I wish they would come up with something that's got, like, a regular VGA out. I'm sure that'll happen.
But HDMI, you can do a converter to get it onto DVI, so that's not so bad. What were you trying to say, BSV?
Well, so how big are these?
They're a little bit larger than your average thumb drive.
Ooh. So a backpack filled with those. Yeah, that's not a powerful supercomputer on your back.
That is a supercomputer on your back. I mean, you put one of those things in a Beowulf cluster. Plus, too, it does OpenGL. So you might be able to take advantage of some of the NVIDIA stuff they've been doing for using GPUs, because it'll have the GPU capabilities. I don't know that it actually has a separate GPU. I think it's all just the ARM chip.
Yeah.
But
like, looking at this... So let's say you were to spend $1,000 on these things. You could get 40 of them, and that works out to be about 28 gigahertz if, you're able to actually fully use all the processors at the same time.
Well, there'd be some overhead. So round it down to the nearest 1,000.
Yeah, so let's say 20 gigahertz, which is still reasonable for $1,000.
That's a lot of processing power in your backpack. Yeah. You have to code it, but
That and your backpack, yeah.
It might be kind of heavy, so maybe you want to go for the briefcase. But I'm sorry. Actually, the first thing that comes to mind is to make a belt out of these damn things. you would have, the supercomputer belt, and you could take that and a heads up display, and you could play. What's the book? Crap. You could play Snow Crash, the real game.
As an interesting aside, if you did want to sit there and network them together, you could dedicate them, each processor, to a specific task, one to graphics output, one to, processing, one to interface UI.
As small and cheap as they are, why just one? Why not have a team of them doing your graphics, a team doing your processing, a team doing your UI, a team doing your Wi-Fi cracking? I mean, I don't know.
I agree. I mean, that's cool. So these are, going to be nerd fun for a long time, and then they're going to get smaller. I imagine in 2 years we'll have them the size of a quarter, and then we'll be able to start implanting them comfortably inside people's bodies, which would be great.
Imagine the fun you could have with these with prosthetic limbs.
Oh, yeah. I know. Oh, man. And we've already got the technology to jam chips in people's heads and arms to read what the muscle movements would be. Yeah. Oh man, it's gonna be wild.
Yeah. Oh wow, it does get in the neighborhood of making cybernetics start to be affordable for everybody.
Yeah. Ghost in the Shell, anybody? All right.
Oh yeah.
So
where can I turn in my body for the upgrade?
just put screensaver on repeat while working on that, and you'll be good to go. actually, I'm going to swap out our closing. Well, it's kind of long. Fuck it. I'm going to swap out this closing song for Screensaver. Next story here. This one's a fun one. It's off Gizmodo. And apparently I didn't do a great job of copying the slug line. Olivia Wilde preserved her modesty in a scene with Ryan Reynolds using pasties. But after filming Rap, producers noticed that Wilde's pasties were clearly visible, and they had no choice but to use computer-generated imagery to make the sex scene seem real as possible. I'm just laughing because they had no choice.
Yeah. So they had pasties, then they digitally added the nipples back in.
CGI is essentially high-end cartoons. Does this make, cartoon porn normal now? I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
I'm just laughing at this because they're essentially using CGI to make sex scenes with actors who didn't want to get naked.
Mm. Yep, exactly.
Well, just look at Beowulf.
Yeah, but Beowulf had, everyone had those creepy dead, giveaway eyes.
Exactly.
All right, so that one's just in there for fun. And another fun story that we've got in there, just to be put in there, is it's a Tech Dirt article, but this article has popped up several times. There's been several studies showing that your pirates are your best customers. This one was from Hadopi, and the only reason I put it in is because I've seen the story prop up like 6 times, so it's like, okay, maybe I better say something about it on the show.
Well, yeah. and it is true. Like, pretty much the people who pirate are the largest content consumers.
Yeah, they're the ones that care the most about it.
Let's be honest about it. These are the guys that are obsessive compulsive enough to actually figure out how to steal shit despite encryption, and so that probably goes to collection and hoarding and other things. So they're going to need to own every version of Star Wars, which is why Lucas is a millionaire.
Well, it's I think it's even simpler than that. Yeah. How many people see a movie on the shelves and go, that looks stupid, I don't like that actor, whatever. So they just don't buy it. Whereas it could be a movie they would really like versus a pirate who goes out, they download a movie, and maybe it's a crappy cam, maybe it's a better DVD rip, maybe it's, usually you're downloading
movies. Maybe they just like it.
Yeah, maybe they just like the movie. But, you pull down your movie and you go, oh, wow, this is really good. I'm going to go out and get the Blu-ray because pirating Blu-ray quality movie is still kind of impractical. I mean, people do it, but...
Yeah, but it's like 10 gigs of download or something like that.
Yeah, for one movie, I mean, come on. But so what ends up happening is your pirates are essentially using piracy, a lot of them anyways, as a demo. Exactly, BSV. And it's like, oh, that's really good. Maybe I better go get the high-quality version.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that... pirate video games to actually play a demo of it, since they don't put a demo on
it. Yeah, a lot of them don't do demos anymore, and the ones that do demos are horribly
demo.
Crippled.
Yeah, and I totally forgot what I was going
to
say.
And sometimes the demo the people release, they polish to perfection while leave the rest to crap.
Well, it's like the Duke Nukem Forever demo, which had like some of the best levels in the game in the demo.
But there's pretty much two groups of pirates. The, non-savvy ones that just, use LimeWire because that's where they can get some songs. And, that's all fine and good. But then you've got the other, the super nerdy pirates out there who actually know what's going on. And those are the people who are most aware of the fact that their dollar dictates who's going to be making more of what. So if you really like something, these people are aware that it's in their interest to pay money for this so more of it will be made in the future.
Right.
There's a movie you really like by a really awesome director. Sure, you might pirate it, check it out, and then you're probably going to go out and buy it, even if you're never going to watch the DVD or Blu-ray or anything like that, just because you want to have that, give that money to that person.
And I would argue that pirates actually preserve music in its entirety because everybody has their special interests. And a lot of the stuff did not make the transfer to CDs. And now that we're going digital, some even more of it's getting left behind. And so it's up to the pirates to actually grab these old, 45s and these old albums or these
figure
old one-off recordings.
Figure out some way to make an MP3 out of them, yeah.
Also, some of them are the only way of getting some of the live concert versions, too.
And beyond that, you can go beyond just regular movies and music and stuff and look at books. There's a ton of books out there that are never going to go digital.
Well, Project Gutenberg much? I mean...
Well, oh yeah, but like that's only for stuff that's not in copyright.
True.
So like there's still a ton of books out there that aren't going digital, but there's a huge group online who are actually all about, like, they've built their own book scanning rigs that actually automatically turn the page, take the pictures, you know, do OCR, turn it into a digital copy.
My understanding was most of them would buy two copies of the book, the one they're going to keep and the one that they're going to tear apart so they could scan the pages flat.
Oh, yeah, you can do that, too. But, I've actually seen people who've made rigs that'll actually turn the page and they've set up cameras instead of scanners. And, yeah, like pretty impressive stuff. And, you know, none of this would happen if they weren't trying to pirate it or anything like that.
Well, I mean, you think about it. That's a hell of a lot of work, you know, for media. And these are the kind of people you'd think these companies would be wanting to reach out to and take advantage of, not, you know, sue into oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But that would take logic. They don't have logic.
So, and I kept skipping the story because of the "well, duh" factor, but we actually got some pretty good conversation out of it. So,
yeah.
Well, it's an interesting topic.
Well, there's a
"well, duh," but we can still touch on it.
Well, you know, we hit the topic so damn often that these content companies just don't know what the hell they're doing. I mean, you know, and I'll say it again. That's one of the reasons we run Galaxy 15 and don't put their copyrighted shit on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Exactly. And I look at it from the point of view. There's a young upcoming artist who's doing the traditional. I want to make $1 million and get on a record label and that kind of stuff. And she, you know, doing the Google Plus thing as a way to get, and actually gaining quite a bit of listeners, like 9,000 live, you know, that kind of stuff for a brand new artist. That's the hard road. And you don't make a whole hell of a lot of money on anything except for live concerts. So I would say, you know, maybe this is a better way for more people to get out there. It's just, we got to get around these, the traditional model. It's been dead. And, you know, we're not going to have as many millionaires that they were making music, but maybe we can get enough people making 150, 200 grand a year, you know, making a good living off of it, and still enjoying what they do.
Well, I don't see why you can't have as many millionaires. Hell, maybe you can have more millionaires. I mean, if you've got more people out there making good music, that's the thing. A lot of people gave up on modern music, or they only listen to the radio because they're so tired of the bullshit. It's the same crap. It's over and over again. And, you know, everybody's just fucking tired of it. That's why, you know, why not? Why not have everyone on Bandcamp be making $1 million? Because, you know, if enough people buy that $1 track, then, you know, why not? I don't see a limit to it just because, and I don't see why you have to have less millionaires just because there's more people making money. But that's a personal thing. So, anyway.
I was going to say, just real quick, it's because we're taking out all the overhead from the record companies. You know?
Even more money to go around then.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's more money directly into the pocket of the producers and not the people who have to stamp out discs and ship them and you know, pay lawyers. So we're going to go ahead and go into break here. And, of course, we're going to play Tack's new song, Dwarf Hole, Diggy Diggy Hole, which is great fun. And he put that out today, and wow. So, of course, we're going to play that. So let me just go ahead and mute Skype here real quick. Then I'll mute myself and hit play. And hit play.
I feel like we need a song to sing whilst digging. Do you have any ideas? It needs to be something funny and sort of lighthearted, doesn't it?
I'm a dwarf and I'm digging a hole. Diggy, diggy hole. I'm digging a hole. I'm a dwarf and I'm digging a hole. Diggy, diggy hole. I'm digging a hole.
I'm a dwarf and I'm digging a hole. Diggy, diggy hole, I'm digging
dinky hole.
Oh, wow. Gotta love the Yogg's cast. Absolutely have to love the Yogg's cast. Okay, you all should be back now. Yep.
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 I'm here.
Alrighty. So, rolling into Digital Dojo, and more on the dojo side of the Digital Dojo here. Lifehacker had a fun article, Basic Self-Defense Moves That Anyone Can Do and Everyone Should Know. And since we're all traveling this week, I thought this would be something good to have. So, just some fun choice words here. So, aim for the parts of the body where you can do the most damage easily. The eyes, nose, ears, neck, groin, knees, and legs. And,
well... that's pretty self-explanatory, isn't it?
It is, but the article's actually really good, which is this is one of the reasons why I'm posting links for this for everything now, is so I don't have to sit there and explain all this. You can just say, go check this link, because there's lots of videos on there. There's a whole set of YouTube videos showing you how to do basic punches, kicks, hits, things to do. There's some really choice lines on there about... You know, don't worry about fighting fair. If you're in a fight at that point, it doesn't matter. And, you know, this is really good stuff for somebody who's never actually been in a fight. You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
I recommend paying somebody who is a professional to actually train you. Because here's something that a good professional will do. They will actually hit you from time to time so that you know what it feels like to get hit. If you haven't, if you're some pasty nerd watching this and thinking maybe you can defend yourself, the first time you get hit,
anything
is going to shock you.
You're not wrong, Heavy, but anything is better than nothing.
That's true.
Oh, absolutely. True. But, you know, I'm going to build on Heavy's comment there and say, you know, like watching and reading and everything like that, all these different techniques and moves and all this other sort of stuff, you know, reading about it and seeing it is totally different than actually doing it. And, you know, I'd say almost to the point of being useless. Like, yeah, sure, you have the technical knowledge of this is a pressure point, yada, yada, yada. But actually executing any of those moves is going to be almost impossible without practice.
Well, I mean, yeah, of course, you got to practice a little bit. That's
a reference to use for practice.
You know, go. Yeah, exactly. It's a good reference for practice. And, you know, you can go get you a punching bag or... You know, a friend or little brother that you don't much care for, and you know, go to town. So anyway, so it's good stuff to know. It's on Lifehacker. You just get your basic defense moves. I just enjoyed the article, and since it's so, I mean you know, we're trying to make this the cyberpunk show, and one of the big things in cyberpunk is the hand to hand ninjutsu. So just thought it'd be
the $25 processor combined with some sort of muscle memory myomer thing it would probably work. So we're gonna have to start working on the programming of the code. So Lifehacker, step up your game a little bit.
There you go.
Well, Mups, Wes, you see, we now have the computer in a backpack. We now just mount a turret to that and have it defend us.
Yeah, there we go. We just need to write the code for your prosthetic limbs to be able to do kung fu. So there you go. I like it. I enjoyed the article. Thought it'd be fun to post up. Another fun little tool. OS Forensics has a cool little tool. Interestingly enough, called OS Forensics. That it's meant for digging through disk images is what it's for. It's got several nice little tools you can spawn. It'll spawn itself onto a thumb drive, and it's currently free. This thing I played around with it for all of 20 minutes, but it looks like it compares, maybe not feature for feature, but it compares pretty well to something like your Encase. You know, searching through files, trying to find stuff, that kind of things. The free version is actually kind of limited. They eventually want you to buy it for $500, but it's useful enough. And this thing is handy. If you have to go pulling apart a hard drive trying to find something, or you're trying to find files on a machine that's been trashed, this thing's pretty handy. So,
yeah,
I would at least pull that down and back it up, because right now, the beta version's free, and it doesn't appear to do any checking online. So that's a good thing to have handy. Another fun thing, and again, this is one where you're going to want to go on the website and get the link, is it's a Google Doc, but it's a SQL injection pocket reference. Now, I know you guys are going to be like, what? But SQL injection is essentially what like Anonymous and LulzSec are doing to get into people's websites. Hacking machines. But this is your common method of hacking a website is SQL injection. because 90% of your websites these days, anything dynamic content, they've got a database on the hind end of it. So what they're doing is they're finding ways to insert code to talk to that database and use that to take over. And once you do, there's all kinds of things you can do. But this is a good reference for it. Lots of commands, lots of different SQL strings to try, places to inject them. Just a good general starting point for SQL injection. And, so if you write web apps, you ought to pull this thing down and try it against your own stuff, because that way you can try to keep, the script kiddies out.
Harden your software, guys. Harden your software.
It almost seems like an oxymoron, doesn't it? Harden the software.
and that's what I'm saying, but you'll remember it.
So, and then the last thing I've got for us in Digital Dojo, this is off quarkphysics.ca, switch SSH, switch SSH, underscore everything.htm. This is an awesome collection of SSH tutorials. Now, I in the past, I've suggested to people, it's like, oh, I got to do something. I got to run this firewall. Well, use an SSH shell. And they look at SSH and they go, ugh, command line, and, kind of panic a little bit. So, but this thing has got it's an awesome write-up of how to set up an SSH server, how to make connections to it, using it for proxying, tunneling, how to reverse an SSH, getting a machine behind something to connect back to you, all kinds of just great information on working with SSH. And honestly, since they're monitoring everything you do on the internet, you need a quick way to get around that. This is a way to do it. You take your $25 chip PC, you drop that in a Starbucks somewhere on their network, and then, use SSH to bounce through it so they can't track your traffic.
Yep.
So
SSH is pretty much the only way the folks in China are able to get onto the real internet anymore, and it does work for them.
Well, it's encryption, if you're using a modern version of SSH, is really good. Some of the older versions, there's actually attacks against the encryption because the ciphers have gotten broken. But the modern versions of the SSH protocol, they're really good. I mean, that's what SSL is based on, by the way. Same libraries. So, anyways, moving on into the topics. So how many of you guys have played with the Aether mod for Minecraft?
Not I.
Not yet.
Oh, Suave, I figured you would have been all over that.
Well, I've been busy.
You've been busy.
Yeah.
I downloaded the patches, haven't played with it yet.
Haven't played with it yet, so I'm the only one who's actually played it.
I'm busy getting ready for tomorrow.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm the only Luddite who does not play Minecraft at all. I do not own a copy of it as of yet.
Then be quiet.
Blasphemy.
You may not speak during this conversation. Well, all right, I can talk about it a little bit. First off, it's damn hard. to get to the Aether, you have to make Aether, I guess you say. A-E-T-H-E-R. I would say Aether, but a lot of people I've heard say Aether.
I'm pretty sure it's
tomato, tomato.
No, there's an E on the end of one of those BSV, so it matters. But anyways, I've got the link in the notes for downloading the mod if you want it. It goes to the Minecraft forum where they posted it. But first up, it's damn hard. To get to it, you have to make a portal like you do when you're going to the Nether in Minecraft, but instead of using obsidian, you use lightstone. So you have to get to the Nether to get the lightstone so you can get to the Aether.
Right.
And when you get to the Aether, well, the first thing that happened to me was I got hit by a snowball and fell through the sky, landed back in. This is the coolest thing. If you fall, it's a bunch of floating islands up in the sky, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you fall off of it, it places you, I'm not exactly sure. I think the farther you are away from your gate, the more, the farther away it drops you in the real world. But it's kind of like the Nether in the spacing of it. So if you fall off of one of the floating islands, you'll fall. It'll kick you back into the real world. The starting world, I guess. The overworld, whatever you want to call it. And, the regular Minecraft area. And you're falling from the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you fall, you fall. But you can make parachutes. So it adds a ton of items. I mean a lot of items. Like two new materials for making tools. Actually, three new materials for making tools, because you got to count the sky wood. A lot of the items are like sky wood, sky water, cloud. So it's like Some of the names are not very creative, but then you get into some of the different materials, and there's different ores and coal, which you have to make new torches because your old torches don't work in the ether. It feels like an expansion. Like, you know how you'd get like the DLC, and you go in the DLC area, and suddenly all your equipment's kind of out of date. You got to get new equipment, and
makes diamond obsolete.
Yeah, diamond is obsolete. You go in with diamond, it's actually faster to use your bare hands to chop down the trees than the diamond axe.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and the materials do different things. Like, if you're using the skywood materials, or skyroot materials, you get two of every block you knock down if they're a world place block. You can't just sit there and spawn new blocks by doing that. But, like, every time you dig something up, you get two of it instead of just one.
Even back in the regular world?
No, only in the ether.
Oh, okay.
At least I think. I don't remember trying it.
Because, you know, that would be great with mining diamond.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. I haven't tried that. I have tried. And it's got a bunch of generated dungeons, you know, gold, silver, bronze dungeons, and all kinds of rewards and items. It adds new inventory slots, so you have gloves and capes. And with the new materials, you get bonuses for having a full armor set. And rings. What else does it add? Pendants. And different effects, you know, there's all kinds of items you can find. And it's really hard.
Fair enough.
I've died a lot trying out the Aether mod. So,
when you die up there, do you end up getting kicked back down to the real world?
Just like the Nether, you go back to wherever your spawn point is. The one thing I haven't tried and I keep meaning to do is putting a bed up in the Aether and see if you die, you end up going back to the Aether instead of back down to the ground. But I haven't thought to try it. So,
Didn't you also say the Valkyrie temples?
That's the silver dungeon, the Valkyrie temples. Yes, and the way they work when you go in there, there's chests everywhere, but most of them are mimics. They're actually, you know, like the D&D mimic looks like a chest. You hit it, and it's a monster. So those are all over the place, and Valkyries spawn in there. Now, Valkyries initially will leave you alone, which is good because they're damn hard to kill. But to fight the boss of the dungeon to open up the treasure room so you can get, you know, your rewards for exploring the dungeon, you have to kill 10 Valkyries and present to the Valkyrie boss 10 victory medals. It's just something the Valkyries drop when you beat them. They are hard to kill. So, you know, you're not going to get gangbanged by, you know, four or five of them if you get that many spawning around you, unless you accidentally hit all of them. But
right.
So when you hit one, it's just that
it's
one.
It's not like your pygmy. It's just the one, and you fight with the one, and when you win or die, you know, it goes back to being peaceful.
Right.
So
and you said that's just the silver?
I think that's the silver dungeon. There's other dungeons. I haven't found that many of them yet, because the other thing you have to do is you have to breed moas, because you put a saddle on them and you can fly them around. And that's
awesome.
A way to transport. But I haven't actually had that much luck with it because, well, I've never done great with the breeding systems in games. It's always it's like, you know, in Final Fantasy VII, you know, I used to have friends going absolutely nuts over the Kokobo breeding system. It's like, yeah, I've got shit to do. So, you know.
I definitely went nuts over the Chocobo breeding system.
You know, I just never get into that kind of aspect.
So you're the one that would kill their digital goldfish.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. Yeah, I had a Tamagotchi. It was not a pleasant experience. Anyways.
Oh, now I've got the Final Fantasy VII Chocobo song stuck in my head.
I don't have that, or I'd pull it up for you. But anyways. So next topic, and we'll probably close out the show on this, is, you know, this is interesting because a lot of people bitch about it, but when the time comes, they don't really care, and that's online connections required to play single-player games. Now, what brought this to my attention and got me thinking about it was a story, and I've got the link here, that Diablo 3 is going to be like StarCraft 2 is, and requiring an always connection, but not just for authentication. Like, if you get kicked off the internet while playing, it logs you out.
Oh, that's painful.
Yeah.
So if you don't have any good internet connection at all, you can't play offline at all.
Right, there's no offline mode. And they've actually got that in the article. There, you know, they've got some quote from the guy, oh, well, our features require an online connection at all times, and the need for these features certainly outweighs the need for playing offline, which is bullshit.
Yeah.
I think they're worried about piracy.
Well, just if Blizzard is listening, you've lost the sale.
Yeah. Same here.
Yeah.
And you know what? I've been a loyal customer of Blizzard since the original Warcraft came out.
Yeah.
And what? I've religiously bought every single one of their games, like, the week that it came out, and I've loved them all, but I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to do this.
What about StarCraft 2? Did you buy? Because StarCraft 2 kind of does
I
the same thing.
I bought StarCraft 2, and I didn't know that they did that when I bought it.
You can still play the single player. You can still do the single player on StarCraft 2, though.
But I'm not sure I'm going to buy any of the other StarCraft 2 games. Like, yeah, it's a good storyline, good campaign, all that sort of stuff. But they just slaughtered the multiplayer so much that it's almost not worth playing, because that was one of the big parts of StarCraft 1.
Yeah, because you have to be on Battle.net. You can't do anything outside of it.
And, you know, like, having to be on Battle.net is fine, but, like, you know, they've just totally broken, like, the whole friend system, or there's no chat rooms anymore for getting pickup games. And, you know, like, having to link your Facebook to Battle.net to get friends.
Now, that I didn't like. I thought that was overkill. Like,
it's just totally broken.
Well, okay, Diablo 3 is going to be the same way.
that's garbage. I'm extremely disappointed. That's because, what was it, Activision?
Activision bought them.
Yeah, and that's when they started going downhill. And it's really too
bad. What were you trying to say, BSV?
Just have an announcement for all video game companies out there. DLC, or not DLC, piracy or anti-piracy stuff is okay, but when it hurts your game to the point it drives people away from it and to piracy, that's not good.
Well, that you know, that's true. The pirates don't give a shit about DRM because they just strip it out, and it's only the real customers who have to deal with it. And I don't know why people don't understand that. Yeah. But,
and like any single game, sorry, I'm just going to say one more thing. Any single game that's come out with this has to be connected in order to play. As long as it's not an MMO, a week after it comes out, it's already cracked. And sometimes even before it comes out, it's already cracked.
That's true. Well, okay, this you know, of course, StarCraft 2 is the one that comes to mind, but another one that a lot of people love is Steam. Well, you got to be online to play Steam.
No, you don't.
No.
It has an offline mode, but if you don't remember to set that and your internet goes out, well, no, it can start in offline mode, can't it?
Yeah. I played when the internet, pretty much an offline mode, as long as it's connected, I think in a couple months is when it starts getting acting up.
Okay.
So, yeah, as long as it's gone online... It's still valid. Okay, he can play offline for a while still.
Yeah, and you know, like, I'm okay with that because it's not an inconvenience to me. And that's really what it comes down to. You can't inconvenience your customers just for your own personal gain.
Yeah.
Or your own perceived personal gain, because it doesn't actually help them.
Because, so far Steam is more of a convenience than it's a hindrance.
Well, your argument there is
far more of a hindrance than anything it's doing. I don't know how this is convenient.
Steam actually listened to their customers and started giving out serial numbers for all the games too, so you could burn a copy and reinstall it if you need to. I mean, you know, when you buy a game, you own a game. So there you go.
Well, and you know, but I mean, this is, you know, if you go read the article about Diablo 3 playing online, they've got some spokeshole from Activision there going like, oh, yes, well, we've got all these new features, and you're going to care about these new features way more than you're going to care about having to be online all the time. And the thing is, the guy in the article has a great example. He brings it up right away. It's like, so I can't play when I'm on an airplane. And like that's a common thing. I mean,
oh, yeah. Or just traveling in general. You know, you're not always going to have an internet connection.
Yeah, so...
dang it, somebody cut the line. Now I can't play my game.
Yeah, what if you're on a laptop and the power's out? I mean, when I know when Katrina hit, there were tons of people who they'd go out and run their car for half an hour to charge up their laptop, and that way they had something to do. You know?
Well, like, we could sit here and come up with example after example after example.
True.
And, they're idiots for alienating their...
but I mean, you know, if you want to get good and pissed, just go read the article because of what the spokeshole is saying. But I'm with you guys. I don't like this trend because, okay, you know, let's be honest. 98% of the time, I've got an internet connection, so it's not that big of a deal for me the way I play games to not be able to, you know, play if I'm offline, because it's actually pretty rare that I'm offline. But
it's that one time.
Oh yeah, no. If you're jonesing to fix and your connection's out. But there's that. But that's not the thing that scares me about this. This is starting a nice trend of, you know, our server is constantly checking with your client, so we're just going to, you know, and Blizzard has done this before with World of Warcraft of, we're just going to start checking, seeing what programs you have running, and, oh, we don't like that program. Yeah, you're banned.
And also, what about the people who live out in the middle of nowhere and can't really get an internet connection?
Or a decent internet connection.
They can't play the game.
I mean, you know, what if you have internet connection, but it's like, you know, dial-up or
satellite.
Like a crappy satellite link that, you know, your connection doesn't stay constant very often. So are you going to get kicked out of the game every 15 minutes because your connection hiccuped?
Yeah. Or, you know, like satellite connections, you've got a bandwidth cap of, I think it's like 400 megabytes.
Oh, I didn't even think. Yeah, because every ISP is going to caps. I didn't even think about that.
And, you know, like most ISPs, when you're in multiple gigabytes, that's going to be fine because it's not going to be a lot of bandwidth. But when you're using satellite internet or anything like that, you're in just a couple hundred megabytes.
Any
usage like that is going to totally kill you.
Well, I'm just thinking there was a story, I think we talked about it, that Comcast, they had their data caps, but they were counting it both ways, up and down.
Oh. Yep.
So this just got me thinking about, you know, a lot of the ISPs switching over to data caps with all of your games constantly checking in. That's just going to suck up your data cap. Slippery slopes abound, but this is a bad idea. Data caps are a bad idea too, but I mean, this is a bad idea combined with a bad idea that's just going to end up biting you in the wallet. And I'm just,
well, you know what? It's going to be another fad with the game developers because it is going to drive away customers, and they're going to see the drop in sales, they're going to realize that it's not a good idea. Because there's a lot of companies who have started to push out games, and they're like, "Yeah, this is going to require an always-on data connection." And then there's this huge uproar from all the fans, and they end up withdrawing that requirement.
there
is hope.
You know, they didn't do it for StarCraft II, but you know what I think? I think anymore. I don't play that many games anyways. I think I'll just save my money and do something more constructive. You know, make Nintendo controllers that pwn machines.
And we've also actually been playing a lot of the low overhead mini games quite a bit more than we've been playing.
I wouldn't even call them mini games, but like just these independent games, like Terraria, Minecraft, Haven and Hearth.
Oh, Flash Games.
Absolutely. I honestly think that that's going to be the direction where gaming's going, because a lot of these people are making as much as all of the big name developers, but they're only spending a fraction of the development costs.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up there. And normally this is the part of the show where I would start promoing, you know, RU's Open Mic, IHN, Yugo's Newsreel. But frankly, with the meetup, I have no clue what's coming up on the stream. When we're doing what?
Chaos is abound.
Chaos abound.
To be fair, there's probably going to be a lot of us being live
and drunk,
completely hammered and ranting on the stream. So over the next couple of days, just tune in, probably nighttime sometime. hell, probably morning too. You'll probably hear us.
Keep your eye on the Galaxy 15 site and the Twitter handle, and we'll do our best to keep you apprised of what's going on.
And if you want to encourage this behavior, send more beer to
All right, well, we're going to wrap up there. We're going to wrap up with another Patient Zero's long screensaver, because I think that is quite fitting to close out on tonight. So, I'll see y'all in Indy. So let me just mute the call, mute myself, and hit play.
the screen fades to black. Plugging in your brain an unrecognized device. I'm your screen savior.
Get back to work, you slacker.
Oh, fuck.